Welcome, listeners, to a new season of Criminal Mind, a brand new true crime podcast that delves into shocking cases that all tie into mental health. I'm Raviv, and today's episode is about Paul Kitterman. I noticed that a lot of the episodes I've done so far have been about women, so I wanted to try and find an intriguing, lesser-known case that features a male. This story was really interesting to read about, seeing as I'm a massive NFL football fan, and this case actually takes place at a football game. A different one, for sure, compared to the other cases I've written about, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it as well. Thank you so much to everyone who listened to our premiere season or just any of our first 6 episodes. We're building such a cool little community here with Criminal Mind, and that makes me even more excited to continue to pursue this route. With that said, we're going to strap in and walk through the story of Paul Kitterman together. Welcome to Criminal Mind. Paul Kitterman was attending a Denver Broncos game at Mile High Stadium on October 23rd, 2014, when he suddenly vanished at halftime. He went to the game with his stepson and friends, and at halftime got up from his seat to head to the restroom. This was the first NFL game he ever attended, and he had told his stepson that he was really excited to watch the Broncos play in person. The game was going well. The Broncos were ahead at halftime. But Paul didn't return from the bathroom. He just vanished, disappearing without his cell phone, credit cards, or money, all of which he'd left at home in a hasty departure. Tia Bake, Paul's friend, and her boyfriend, Jay Yust, invited him to go with them to the Denver Broncos versus San Diego Chargers NFL game last minute. It was a Thursday night game, and his stepson Jared came along with them. Like I mentioned, it was Paul's first NFL game, and he was just excited to be in that atmosphere for the first time. Although Tia and Jay had been unable to get 4 seats together, Paul was able to sit with his stepson in a 2-seat section, while Tia and Jay had seats together in a different section. If anyone listening has ever been to an NFL game, there are typically 3 main sections to each stadium, excluding suites. The 100s are close to the ground, 200s are in the middle, and the 300s are the highest level, but no matter where you are, the layout of an NFL stadium makes it pretty easy to see the game well. Paul and his stepson Jared were in section 230, and a plan had been made to meet up with Tia and Jay at halftime. I'm just speculating here because I didn't read anything about this, but just with my experience attending NFL games, halftime is typically when most attendees get up to use the restroom, grab extra snacks, and they typically cut off alcohol at the end of the third quarter, so people will get their final drinks as well. Halftime in the NFL is 12 minutes long, so it's not a ton of time to get up and do all of those things, especially with how long lines can get for both the restroom and snack and drink stands. The group of 4 did meet up at halftime, according to the Daily Mail, but Jared needed to use the restroom. I'm not 100% clear on this because there weren't a ton of articles that I was able to find on this case, but based on what I've read, I'm assuming that Tia and Jay went back to their seats after catching up for a few minutes at halftime, so they wouldn't miss the start of the third quarter. Paul was left to wait outside the restroom for Jared, and then returned to their seats together. However, when Jared came out of the restroom, Paul was nowhere to be found. There wasn't any concern on Jared's end. He ended up just walking back to their seats alone, anticipating that Paul would come back on his own. But the second half of the game continued on, and there was no sign of Paul. I've personally been to a lot of NFL games. I always try to go to 2 a season, and it is very easy to lose sight of a person that you're with because of how many people attend these games. Some stadiums cap at 100,000 plus people, so unless you're close together, it's easy to lose someone. I don't blame Jared at all for assuming that Paul would meet up back at their seats because that's kind of just what you do at NFL games or any sports games. I've done that many times at games. But remember, Paul didn't have his phone with him. The Daily Mail states that he memorized Tia, Jay, and Jared's numbers, but it's easy to mix up phone numbers and forget them if you're in a state of disarray. Once the game ended, Tia called Jared to let them know that they were ready to leave. Her and Jay were waiting at gate 8. The drive home was over 2 hours, and leaving an NFL stadium can take a while with the overflow of traffic. Jared told Tia that Paul wasn't with him. He had been waiting for him. He thought that Paul might have met up with Tia and Jay, but they hadn't seen him either. This finally sparked concern. Where could he have gone if he wasn't with either? The trio began an extensive 3-hour search in and around the stadium. They notified the authorities, called hospitals, the local jail. None of them had seen or heard from Paul. They began looking in every possible nook and cranny around the stadium, including searching through bushes, hoping that they would find him safe somewhere. There are an endless amount of places that a person could be in an NFL stadium. But what strikes me as odd about this story is that if Paul was lost, he didn't locate authorities within the stadium or even an employee to help him find his seat. So to me, it feels like the possibility that he just simply got lost is immediately off the table. There was something more to Paul's disappearance that wasn't clear yet. Paul was described by the group as easygoing and someone who wasn't into fancy technology. So it makes sense that he didn't bring his phone to the game. Based on the descriptions I've read about him, he just seems like a laid-back man who was excited to enjoy his first in-person football game. This just makes his disappearance even more strange. Where could he have possibly gone when shortly beforehand he was so happy to be attending this game? After hours of searching, with no leads or luck, the trio made their way back home on that 2-hour-plus long drive. I'm not sure what I would have done either in this situation. They hoped that he'd find his way back home and meet them there, but according to ABC News, he only had $50 cash on him. Unless there was a bus or local train line running, there weren't many other options to get that far of a distance besides walking, and that would take days. I want to read this direct quote from Tia, where she talks about Paul's character, because I think it gives a lot of insight into his overall personality. Paul had been working for Tia's boyfriend Jay, who also attended the game, for almost 10 years. Quote, "Paul is the most trustworthy man you could ever wish to meet. He would hate the fuss that is growing up around his disappearance. Paul is just not the type of person who would do something like this for attention. He would never deliberately let anybody worry about him. That is just not who he is. He never wants stress or heartache or anything like that. He is the type of person that if you are having a bad day, will do anything he can to be there for you." End quote, as quoted to the Daily Mail. Everything about this quote makes Paul's disappearance even more strange. It doesn't seem to me like they were even considering a kidnapping or any type of foul play. There was no evidence of that, and those types of situations are not too common with a grown man. If he just walked away on his own free will, what was the reasoning? And why would he not give any of the group a call afterwards, maybe on a borrowed phone, to let them know that he was okay? Of course, one of the first things that I know is on everyone's mind is, did he consume any alcohol at the game, and was he inebriated? Now, I've seen some wild things happen at NFL games with people who are obscenely drunk. There are always police scattered throughout the stadium, around the stadium, walking around the seating sections to ensure safety, especially with mass alcohol consumption. Jared said that Paul had between 4 and 5 beers throughout the first half, but he wasn't inebriated. I mean, 4 to 5 beers and a half is definitely enough to get a person buzzed and legally drunk. How he handled his liquor, I don't know, but a half of a football game is about an hour and a half of play without too many penalties. So to drink 4 to 5 beers in that amount of time is a decent amount. Again, I don't know how his body responded to liquor, so I don't want to make any assumptions about how drunk he was, but I think it's an important part of the story. 5 days later, after no word from Paul, he was safely located more than 100 miles away from the stadium in Pueblo, Colorado. When he was located by police, he was medically sound and told them that he, quote, had his fill of football and decided to go for a walk, end quote, as quoted by ABC News. Nobody really knew exactly what happened. He was safe, he was unharmed, and he didn't provide any other reason as to why he opted to leave the stadium. However, although physically unharmed, Paul was said to be in a fragile state. He had no documented health issues, none that I could find information on at least, and no documented history of mental illness. Tia, his friend who attended the game with him, was confused, saying that what he did was out of his typical character. It seems like everyone around him was confused, all saying something similar to Tia. Paul was found near a furniture store on I-25. And a concerned citizen called the authorities after recognizing him. While attending the Broncos game, he had been wearing a Broncos ball cap, which he was not wearing when he was found. He told the police that he had gotten rid of it so no one would recognize him. The police still did not suspect any foul play, and it became even more clear as they spoke to Paul that he had left on his own accord. But he had traveled over 100 miles. Why did he leave, and where was he going? To be honest, in my research, none of these questions were really answered. Paul had told the police a few simple statements: that he wanted to be somewhere warmer, he decided to go for a walk, and that was really it. He was lucid. He spoke to police with clarity and understanding, although tired, which is understandably so. He had a long journey. But there were so many questions left unanswered, and I think the biggest one is, was there something bigger going on here? Did Paul have an undiagnosed mental illness that led to him leaving the Broncos stadium? As always, I want to reiterate that I am not a mental health professional. I created this podcast as a regular human being who has always been fascinated by true crime cases, specifically ones that revolve around some basis of mental health. I am also mentally ill myself, which I say in a nonchalant manner because it's just something that I've lived with since young childhood, something that I'm quite used to, and I've been in treatment for over 20 years. I never felt like being a psychologist or anything along those lines was the right fit for me, but I'm deeply interested in the subject of mental health and always have been. So I can't and won't make any diagnosis suggestions about any of the subjects in the cases I talk about. But I do a lot of research to maybe dig a bit deeper and offer my personal opinion, which of course is not medically professional. There hasn't been any speculation in any of the articles I've read, other than the police stating that he was in a fragile mental state when he was found. The Pueblo, Colorado police statement read that, quote, "Kitterman mentioned sleeping in treed areas and in bushes during his journey to Pueblo," end quote. It seems like his relatives just wanted privacy as they unraveled this case themselves, and there isn't much more than that. The first thought that I had was that maybe the environment of the stadium caused some anxiety for him, if the consumption of alcohol played into his decision-making. Large crowds can be quite anxiety-inducing, and the NFL stadium atmosphere is usually rowdy and very loud. I actually found a great article on the Daily Mail, where they spoke to Paul's best friend, Brian Case. At the time, he had known Paul for 35 years and was surprised that he agreed to attend the Broncos game. I'll read Brian's direct quote to the Daily Mail. Quote, "He's like me. He doesn't like crowds. He's never been to a football match, and I haven't either. Something just happened. He snapped. He likes the country. I was surprised he was even at the football game. Horse ranching and hunting. That's what we do. That's just how we are. We don't even really know how to use cell phones," end quote. I find Brian's quote incredibly interesting because this is someone who seems to really have a good handle on who Paul is. I'm not saying that Tia, Jay, or Jared didn't, but when you know someone for 35 years and they also lived together at a point for 6 years, you can usually tell what is in and out of character for them. Paul was hospitalized after being found. I'm not sure for how long or what exactly they treated him for. I'm going to just assume dehydration, and they likely also conducted a mental evaluation as well. Again, just an assumption. But Brian's quote is something that really sticks to me. Maybe Paul felt like he had to go to the football game. Maybe he was coerced or convinced. Maybe he pretended to be excited because his stepson Jared was excited to go together for the first time. Many people, especially people who experience anxiety, often feel pressured in particular social situations. They don't want to say no because they don't want people to think something is off. They don't want to say no because they don't want anyone to know that they're feeling anxious or just genuinely don't feel comfortable being in a particular social setting. An NFL game is a huge social setting. This stadium in particular had 76,000 people. If Paul didn't really want to go for whatever reason he had, I can easily see how the situation could have been triggering for him. His family made a statement on the Facebook page that they made for him when he went missing, which has since been deleted, so I can't look for any additional posts. They said that they just simply wanted privacy. I'll actually read a bit of the statement. Quote, "We know there are many questions that some of you may have, but for the time being, we are asking that you respect their privacy as they have been through a lot. We love all of you, and we will never forget your kindness, compassion, and your willingness to help us find Paul," end quote. Very simple, very straightforward. Although I'm sure you all have questions, and I also have a million and one questions, the most important thing is that Paul was located safe and unharmed. It really isn't anyone's business if he was diagnosed with something while hospitalized or has been in the past. He was found. There haven't been any additional updates since, and I haven't even been able to find any personal social media pages for Paul. He seems like a small town, quiet guy who just enjoys his own work and hobbies and likes a quiet atmosphere. Thankfully, he was found safe, there were no additional injuries, and he was seemingly able to continue to pursue his cozy life in the country. Thank you again so much for checking out Criminal Mind. If this is the first episode you've listened to, there are 6 other episodes you can listen to that we've released so far. I'm currently planning out season 3, so if you have any suggestions on cases that fit the realm of Criminal Mind, reach out to me on socials at IamRevive across the board. I also just want to apologize for the lack of consistency with the release of season 2. I know it's been quite some time since the first season ended. It was honestly difficult for me to write out a new script every week, including the episode research, with my work schedule. I own a public relations firm, I work a second job at night, which is now over an hour away from my new house, and I also have a puppy, so that's taken up a lot of my time the last few months. But I love doing this podcast, so I took some time to figure out a solid plan to keep it up and running at a somewhat regular pace. The best thing I could think of was to have seasons every few months, about 6 to 10 episodes per season. I actually really like when podcasts do that. It gets you excited for the next season and gives the hosts a bit of a break. So that's what I'm going to do, see if it works, and if you like what you're hearing so far on Criminal Mind, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, rate us 5 stars, and share with all of your true crime addicted friends. See you next time. Love, Revive.